Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
It's Suns Media Day. Kellen Olson and Kevin Zimmerman here for the Empire of the Suns podcast. We just got back from Media Day. And it was actually a lot of good stuff, a lot of optimism. I think this year they finally avoided the, even though they're supposed to get better, they've avoided the questions about what happens when you lose a lot, because everyone seemed really serious about culture changing. They have a few new veterans. We'll get to that in a little bit, but the story of the day is still don't have a starting caliber point guard. They have four guys who will compete in camp at this point. How does that work?
That was the question we tried to ask, but the thing about asking that question, you got to think about it not from a media perspective, from just a general perspective. McDonough and Kokoshkov can't go out there and say, we need a point guard, we're screwed. They can't do that with how much they're going to be relying on. At least one of these guys is going to be the backup point guard. That's the thing. If they eventually acquire a point guard, one of these guys is still going to be the backup. And if they don't acquire a point guard, one of these guys is going to start. So they can't just go out there and say that. But McDonough ended his comment by saying they're going to explore trade options. My vibe from what Kokoshkov said, he mentioned that there's going to be smaller stretches of minutes for the point guards in particular. I don't know if that means that they're going to be switching around quarterbacks. Josh Rosen on my mind. They're going to be switching around point guards more, and it's going to be guys interchanging. I don't think that makes sense for a point guard. So I think he means more that, yeah, we're going to like pull this guy for 4 minutes into the game for Josh Jackson or one of those forwards off the bench. Then we're going to run all those guys out there with Booker. And the general impression I got from point guard, actually, we can keep talking about it, but is that they are very serious and real, from what they are saying at least, about the idea of not positionless basketball necessarily. But yeah, we're just going to throw four of these wings on the floor at once. They seem to be serious about that. McDonough said on TJ Warren, it might have been Kokoshkov, one of them said, we like the idea of TJ at the four because then we have four guys who can handle the ball. And there's different definitions there of like what you're actually getting out of each ball handler, but it is a true statement at the end of the day. And that's what's so not enticing about this team, but what is going to be the main storyline now is all of the wing stuff that they are doing because they don't have that point guard.
Yeah, I think the pressers today confirmed what we kind of assumed, which was, look, you don't need a traditional point guard. Like, you need a dude to bring up the ball, but the offense is going to move that ball. It's going to have guys making different plays and reads, catching, making quick decisions, and getting rid of the ball. There's not going to be a lot of pounding. There's not going to be as much like straight up pick and rolls atop the key. And if there are, like, they do have wings to do it to some degree. And that's where the concerns about the point guard, like, I can totally be sold on if this offense is good and works, you don't even need a point guard. But you need those wings then to act like playmakers. And that's what's going to be most interesting for a guy like TJ Warren, a guy like Josh Jackson, the latter of whom is kind of turnover prone just because he's young. The former guy is not known as a great passer. In fact, Zach Lowe wrote about how few assists TJ Warren got, I think, last year. So that's going to put a lot on them. It's certainly going to be different, but I think it was just confirmation that while they don't need a point guard in this offense, it's still, even matchup-wise, it's a question mark. Like, there are good point guards. Are you going to have Josh Jackson playing defense against point guards? We'll see. But yeah, I mean, it was very interesting just listening to these guys talk about learning Igor's offense. And the thing that stuck out to me when he was discussing it was he said they use the word blender a lot as far as how they want to get defenses confused and how they want to be moving and just have guys kind of their heads are running crazy because the Suns are just coming off screens and moving all the time.
And the whole positionless basketball wings, they weren't answering that question by saying you don't need a traditional point guard, but they seemed like they were sort of hinting at, we're not going to have a traditional point guard out there a lot. And I think you do very much need that still. And they are, they're saying what they're going to say. You know, the odds of us sitting here talking about the point guard position like this on opening night, I think, are pretty low. We both agree that something is coming, maybe not by media day is what you were saying, but more like the next 2 weeks really are going to be the time when they buckle down on it. But to me, the thing that stood out the most is from a roster standpoint and collection of players, if there is a point guard coming that is a stopgap or someone who they don't want to give up a lot of assets for, they are going to have to be extremely creative to find all these guys minutes. And I looked at Dragan specifically as a guy who's going to be hurt by this. I think TJ, Ariza, Josh, a lot of these guys are going to be playing the four, along with Ryan Anderson, who we presume is the starter. That's what Woj reported. That's what it sounded like, that he is going to be the starter. They said it's an open competition. They said the same line they always do about minutes.
Yeah, every year.
But I think Dragan is a guy in particular where I look at him where he's going to be only a power forward for them, I think. And I think TJ will play over him, obviously. I think Ariza, in order to get more minutes for other guys at the three, is going to slide down to the four. And I think Dragan is a guy looking at this rotation and just hearing what everyone is saying, not about Dragan specifically, but just about how much they're going to move guys around. That, so here's my point, basically. Ryan Anderson is probably going to take up a good percentage of the minutes at power forward, but how much of that percentage can we say is going to be one of those four small forwards as well? Like, I would say it's very high. Like, say Ryan Anderson is taking, there's 48 minutes there, right? Say Ryan Anderson's averaging 24, he's averaging half of them. Yeah. I would guess that at least 30 to 40% of those minutes are going to be TJ or Ariza or Josh or Mikel.
Yeah.
So that leaves 10%, 20% for Bender, and that's how many minutes a game? 7-8 minutes a game? So I took it as, that's the biggest thing that stood out to me now is, like, I mean, who knows? We could be talking and they trade for Kemba or trade for something like that and one of the wings does leave. But for now, how they do this, and we're not saying Dragan, I'm not saying Dragan deserves those minutes by any means, but someone is going to be naturally left out, and it's right. Going to be interesting to see how Igor navigates this. But the good thing is that he seems extremely well-equipped and has been thoroughly keeping his mind on this, and I think he understands better than anyone what he has to accomplish with the rotations.
With that in mind, it'd be fun to see Dragan Bender in limited minutes, where it's like, that's his biggest problem. It's like, you need to make an impact, like, whether it's 20 minutes, you can't wait. Like, you can't wait until someone yells at you to shoot. If you're in 8 minutes a game, shoot it, play D. And I think that actually might not be a bad thing for him. And that brings up kind of another point that Ryan McDonough said among the newsworthy things, which was he explained more into the Rockets trade. And, of course, getting Ryan Anderson and Melton was about fitting that system where they need shooters, they need defenders. But outgoing was Marquese Chriss, and he actually said, we didn't, I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically DeAndre Ayton and Marquese Chriss wouldn't fit. And that kind of tells me they didn't think he was a stretch four anymore, which Bender is. And that, yeah, he's just such a raw prospect, man. And that kind of stood out that Ryan admitted that. But yeah, I think going into today, we knew that this roster was constructed around Igor. And, like, going back to the point guard thing, like, he's said a million times before today, like, they're looking. Like, they know they need a point guard. And, like I said, just defensively, you need a guy who defends point guards. Like, if you slide Devin or Josh, whatever, they're not going to be able to do that. So
let's move on to the wing, where we sort of dipped into this before, but specifically what some of the players talked about. TJ, apparently, with a junior on the back of his jersey, was very different in conversation with us from what I heard. I was not over there, but I heard he was very open and adamant and It maybe to no surprise, if we would have made predictions for what we were going to hear on Media Day, we would have said, oh, they're probably going to talk about how good TJ Warren's jump shot has looked or whatever. And that's definitely what we heard, but it sounds like there was, they in fact did say, I think McDonough did say for sure, that there was a tweak in his shot. And I saw some video of him playing open run, and someone on Twitter noticed that there was like a change in the shot. They're like, well, what's this? And I just was like, yeah, it's just a pickup open run video. So, but there might be a change there.
And he talked about it. Yeah. I mean, it was, so he said it was all body motion, and I knew what he was talking about right away. Like, he kind of had that Grant Hill twist where he kicks out his legs a lot, and it's just not needed. So now he's working on just straight up and down, and holding his form. So I don't know if his release is going to look that different up top. But as far as body, like, he did that just because he comes off screens and stuff on the elbows a lot, I think. But if he's working on just less motion down below the waist, as far as spotting up for three, that's interesting. And another thing more broadly was, I was asking Igor about Josh offensively, and I can get into that a little more, but he straight up said, like, if you're a wing in the NBA nowadays, you need to shoot threes. And so the theme was TJ and Josh have been working on their threes a lot. Josh said he hasn't really changed his form, which I think he did during the season last year. He was working on more of a set shot, less weird motions with his arms going up.
Yeah.
So we'll see what that looks like. But the point is, Igor, it seems like, basically was like, you guys need to learn to shoot. That's just something that needs to happen for us to have that floor spacing, that he's obviously really putting a priority on that.
It always felt off with the way TJ was approaching his threes last year. I don't really know how to describe it, but maybe it's because he was so focused on scoring that
wasn't approaching maybe them.
Maybe he wasn't even really focused on threes last year at all in shooting, and was just so focused on the role of being a 20-point-per-game scorer and being a better rebounder and all these types of things that maybe wasn't focused on shooting. I'm not saying at all this is going to hold over, but there is evidence that through 47 games before he broke his foot, I believe, was the injury. Shot 40% from three on 1.5 a game. I'm not saying he's going to come in and shoot 40%, but, I mean, the last 2 years, he shot 26 and 22, so that's more likely to hold up. But the need for improvement is so high that I just can't really buy into anything that they're saying until we see it. And when we see it, 29% would be awesome, but at the same time, in reality, he needs to be at like at least 33, 34 to be somewhat respectable. And even then, he's the guy that defense holds both their hands up when he's in the corner and says, go ahead, dude, shoot the ball. We'd rather have you do that than have DeAndre in the post or Devin out there with the ball or whoever, Mikhail or Trevor open. Like, you take that shot. And that, to me, is where his fit in this has always been a mystery to me. And the closer we get to the preseason, today is September 24th, and October 1st is their first game. It's a week from today. So we're going to see, in at least preseason, how he looks in this offense. But to me, his skills seem to contradict. But we'll see, and it's encouraging to hear Igor, at least. That's the thing that we keep coming back to with him, is he is more aware than any of you. Like, you might think, when you were watching Jay Triano or Watson, I know even us, as many people were like, why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? Igor is on it. He's extremely on it.
Who? I'm trying to think and rack my brain. Someone actually said today, it was one of the new guys, like, that they're just getting more attention. Like, it was almost like a shot at the last coaching staff, even though it wasn't meant that way, but it was like, I think it might have been Trevor talking about Josh Jackson, and it was someone talking about Josh Jackson where it was just like, hey, how is he
player guidance was the term that he used. Yeah. Player guidance.
And it was like, wow, and he was like not making excuses for Josh, but it's just like, look, this is a guy who's raw, who's young, who's with a bunch of guys in his same boat, who last year obviously was figuring out how to be a professional and stuff, and the Suns have been open about that since, after that sit down, and then he played a lot better. But it was more like, yeah, guidance. He's being told what to do. Go work on your 3-point shot, not just because you obviously have to shoot better, but if you want to play, if you dangle that carrot in front of someone where it's like, I can't have you on the floor if you can't, if you're going to jack up an open three or not even take one, in TJ's case, I think, because that's his problem, he wouldn't even think about taking it. Like, you need to take that shot. That's what I'm expecting of you if you want to see playing time. So I think that stood out. And in general, like, Ariza actually used the phrase, like, everyone keeps talking about the Suns. Hey, if they're losing a bunch, they're going to trade Ariza back to the Rockets. Like, I've seen that a million times because he's on an expiring deal. And he's going to have made his money and then go join the team that he was on to win. But, like, from what we heard from him and Ryan Anderson, who are pretty good friends, they both said, they seem really committed. And I know that's, like, Jared Dudley says that. Tyson Chandler says that. Tyson Chandler today said, like, he's over sitting out games. And he kind of said that wasn't an injury thing. That was just an agreement. There's no point to put wear and tear on his body for a team that needed to play the young guys, but he said that phase is over and he wants to play, and he wants to play winning basketball. So the tenor in that regard has kind of changed around the team, where, look, we're not expecting them to win 35 games even, but it seems like the veterans who are here are serious about at least trying to get to 35.
I'm going to find the stat for when I write something on Trevor later this week at training camp, but a lot of the teams he played on, I mean, he emerged, of course, on that Lakers team. That Lakers team won 65 games. He won 65 games that year, and he was 24. So the amount of winning that he has done throughout his career, just in terms of being on winning teams throughout, is pretty impressive. Of course, there's the Orlando teams that were mixed in there as well. He was on the Knicks early on, but then, of course, the Houston teams as of late. He was on those Hornets teams during the start of the Anthony Davis era. He's been on teams that have been successful, and him and Ryan Anderson in particular are coming from a system and a team that was extremely successful. Josh, was it Troy? Actually, Troy Daniels said something that really stood out to me was I can't exactly remember who he was talking about, but his answer was essentially, as a veteran, these guys towards the end of the year got a little bit tired of hearing the same old things from the veterans and everything. But to have people come in like Trevor Ariza, who has played with, like, the first thing these guys are going to, like, he played with Kobe and he won with Kobe, but it goes beyond that. He's been such a great veteran, and so has Ryan Anderson, and they've won being important guys. This is not something where they came over and they were the seventh or eighth best players on those teams. Like, Trevor Ariza was extremely important to the Rockets. Ryan Anderson was extremely important to them for a certain amount of time and was important to some other good teams as well. And that is going to help them relay their message. And something that you just talked about is that they're talking about establishing the culture a lot. And that is as important as that's as important as what McDonough and Kokoschkov and everyone is trying to do with this offseason and the planning that they've done in terms of roster construction and everything. Ryan Anderson said something really interesting. He talked about the time of his trade, and he said there was a sit-down with the Rockets, and 2 days later he was traded after that sit-down. So this is something that has been burning, and he's been in trade rumors forever. But it actually seems like it was something where he's like probably just said, like, I don't want to be here anymore. And then within 2 days, they got it done. And I think that says a lot about how the Suns feel about him as well. And we thought the trade was about a lot of different things, moving on, et cetera. But it sounds like the Suns were, with how quickly that deal materialized, it 2 days is what they said. What he said, it sounds like they were pretty psyched to get a chance at him.
Other tidbits? I mean, it was just an interesting day where there was a lot of optimism, which I guess is just us making assumptions about what this team will be. I asked a lot of questions about the offense because I think it's fascinating just hearing how they speak about Igor, and that he has, like McDonough said, he has a whiteboard in his office that has, like, did he say 100 plays on it? Or it was like, it's just, his playbook's very large, and
Davon Reed just, like, said a lot, like, three times in a row or something, he accentuated how much there was in the playbook and just how much they have to go through.
Yeah, so I was like, I was just asking, like, is this hard to learn? Like, is too much a bad thing? And I don't know the answer to that, but they all said, like, even Mikal Bridges said after Summer League, it started to kind of click for him where he was doing the right reads. He kind of knew what to do, and he's just gotten better at it. And I think that's what, as we look at training camp, bridging Summer League to, which we saw good things, and we saw some of those things and ideas that we expected from Igor's offense. When we hit the preseason, we'll see where they're at and if they've improved and if they're picking this up, because, like, you need smart basketball players. I don't care if the offense is simple at the end of the day. You still need guys to know where to be when you set up a play. You get a few seconds behind on that 24-second shot clock, just setting some guy up to be in the right position to get the play going, and that's key seconds where that offense isn't going to get through its progressions to get an open shot maybe at the end of the shot clock. So that's something that I'm going to be looking at.
What did you think about what Devin said? Anything stand out to you at all? We haven't even talked about Devin Booker yet, but...
Okay, so Finger, he had the same story where it just... He went to Suns camp, swelled up the next day. We've talked about that.
Didn't have a specific time where it happened, and he was like, ow, I think I tore my hand. He woke up one morning, he said, and he noticed that the area had swelled up again.
Yeah.
I'm not saying we go down that path. I'm just saying that's what he talked about. He has been working out left-handed just to kind of get in on stuff. He's been doing cardio and everything still. He passed his preseason conditioning test. So for those of you who think he's just sitting around playing PUBG, he's putting work in. But there wasn't really anything else that stood out besides him saying he wants to be ready for the start of the regular season, which same. I hope he is too, and everyone else hopes he is too. But there wasn't really anything definitive that he talked about. DeAndre Ayton was someone who three or four different times someone just talked about, like, holy crap, that kid is so immensely gifted and talented for his age. Rashawn Holmes brought it up. I think D'Anthony Melton might have. Ryan Anderson definitely did. He just was gushing about him, just couldn't believe him and stuff. And I asked him about passing, and specifically as a shooter, just like someone to kick it out to, and he didn't even eat that question really. He was just like, it's everything, man. Like, he just, like, the amount of stuff that he can do at his age. And then Tyson talked about that. I asked him specifically, Tyson, as someone who made his money playing defense mostly, Tyson, and if he looks at DeAndre physically, like he had mentioned earlier, as that side of the ball where he can work, and he kind of said, like, yeah, we're going to make sure he works on both ends. That's why I'm here. That's what I'm going to do, and we're going to make sure that he focuses on that. And then, of course, when Igor gets asked about him, it's just defense. He's a center. We want him to be Rudy Gobert types of deals, which is everything that we want to hear on him. We do not want to hear about how his mid-range jumpers are doing.
Yeah, his tone was different. Most of the other guys were very cheery. He was kind of subdued in a way, and that happens when Joel Embiid says that your expletive's going to get kicked. And yeah, I mean, he's kind of getting, like, super professional, and he kind of talked about it where it's not, I don't want to say he's not being as fun anymore, but it seems like he's fully aware of the gravity of being the number one pick, and that he does have to get better, and he does have to get good at defense and stuff like that. So I think that's a good thing. I think that him taking this seriously, you see moments like on social media where he's a goofball, but in front of the mic, it kind of looked like he's taking to that professionalism.
Just a reminder of how different people can be and how different prospects can be as people as a whole, because two or three times when he was talking, he was like, they take this seriously. This is really a job, and saying things like that. Whereas Devin Booker talked after Ayton, and someone asked Devin Booker about those comments, and Devin's like, I've been this way since I was a toddler. Like, that's always been my mindset on just like how much hard work it takes and this being a job and everything. And he's like, he said, like, pretty much said, like, I can't relate because I've just approached it differently. And I think that just speaks to the differing mindsets of prospects a couple of times. Suns fans will like to hear that Ayton said that Steve Nash and him text a couple of times, and he said he gets, quote-unquote, big paragraphs from Steve. So it's probably him being like, hey, how should I be doing as a rookie? And like Nash sends him like a 300-word thing.
Dude.
Which is the most Steve Nash thing ever, probably.
I would do so much better at my job if Steve Nash sent me paragraphs of good advice.
Yeah. That stood out to me a little bit, but though in terms of how Ayton said that and how Booker said that, I asked Ryan McDonough on the side about Rashawn Holmes and just what their thought process was with the move there. And the thing that he mentioned that we talked about maybe when that trade happened was he used the term vertical spacing and says they have a lob threat at center every, like, you can throw it up and they can go get it. We know how the Tyson lobs have gone in the past year and a half or so. They've kind of been trending downward, but if you haven't seen Rashawn Holmes play before, that dude can jump, and everyone has seen DeAndre Ayton jump, so there's going to be just throw it somewhere over there, and they will get it.
Unless Tyson's in, throw it a little lower. No offense. I'm sorry, Tyson.
Shooting and defense was a really big theme because that's what they improved on the most. I asked a lot of the guys about switching on defense, in particular the people who do it. I asked Davon about it, and he said it's a big step in the right direction, and this is really something they really couldn't necessarily do last year. But you look at the amount of guys that they have. If you go like position by position, they have Melton at point guard. At shooting guard, they have Davon. In terms of being able to switch and adequately guard at least like 2 or 3 positions, I think you can say DeAnthony. I think you can say Davon Reed at small forward. Obviously, there's Ariza. There's Josh Jackson. There's Mikal Bridges. At power forward, you got Dragan. And at center, you've got DeAndre, at least in terms of keeping his feet, staying active. And Rashawn is someone that came up as well for them in terms of just how quick his feet are. So that's something where hearing players talk about it more, it is kind of clear that up and down the roster they have these guys. It's not just that they have Mikal Bridges and Trevor Ariza right now. It's they have, that was like 6 or 7 guys that I mentioned. They can have all switching lineups out there very easily.
I asked Josh Jackson about his finish line ad. That was my like best journalistic endeavor, and he said it was long and he just appeared in an ad for 10 seconds dribbling a basketball, and Migos eventually showed up 4 hours late.
Yeah, he said he was there for 6 hours and to be in there for 10 seconds, but he said it was a lot of fun. Someone asked Trevor Ariza if he's going to miss State Farm commercials. He said no. When George King first came up, I asked him about riding his bike backwards because if you didn't see on Instagram.
Not bikes, man. Not unicycles and things with wheels.
No, it's so Mikhail.
No, tell the story. I wasn't there.
Yeah, so Mikhail posted an Instagram video on his Instagram story of George King riding a bike backwards, and Mikhail was like, this dude really rides his bike backwards. He doesn't know how else to do it. And so I saw that and took a screenshot of it, and I'm like, what? Like, George King only knows how to ride a bike backwards? And he explained to me, after first giving the background story of how he came to learn how to do it, he said something like, once you learn how to do it, you can just do it. It's like riding a bike.
I learned how to ride a bike backwards.
Really?
Yeah.
That's very
but
weird.
I first learned how to ride forwards.
It would give me so much anxiety, like just or back pain, like turning around all the time.
I haven't gone on a bike, so I couldn't tell you if I still know how to do it, but I could find out.
But anyway, he made the joke, like he got on it backwards and like looked at all his teammates like, what? and played in on the joke that like I only know how to ride the bike backwards for a couple of minutes. And then he eventually was like, no, I'm just kidding. Like, I know how to ride a bike, of course, come on.
That's
which is really funny. And tells you about George King. We have talked to him like very
every
scarcely.
Time there's something about George King that you're like, this guy, no wonder they signed this guy.
But he's funny and he's very genuine and seems like just to have the type of mindset for a two-way guy to work out. And I think people are going to really like him as they get to know his personality more. And I highly recommend the follow on Instagram to see more riding bike backwardsness from George.
Point guards real quick. I wasn't there for Okobo. You can touch on that in a sec. Isaiah Cannon was just interesting because obviously he's still kind of coming back from that very gruesome ankle, I guess, fracture. Talked a little bit about, you know, the team giving him that chance. And what was stood out to me was this dude's like the biggest veteran here, like, and he might not even make the team. And he was talking about, yeah, everyone knows you need a veteran point guard, like just their voice. And he said it like, I guess I'm that guy because I'm the oldest. I actually do have the most experience here. So I kind of need to at this point in my career, be that guy, which was a kind of interesting realization. He knows he's like been a borderline NBA player. He's been around, but he's like, yeah, that opportunity's there for me to be that guy.
He has 205 games of NBA experience.
All right.
Shaq Harrison has 23, and then obviously the two other rookies have zero. So by default, I actually think he is going to make the roster, just because by default there's such a huge gap there that if this is actually the roster heading into the season, I think he is going to make it. I think D'Anthony Melton, the writing is on the wall with Shaq Harrison. Shaq is a guy, defensive. D'Anthony Melton, same thing. And I don't know why you would keep two of them, and you would keep all four of them. They're obviously going to keep Ellie.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, too, because you were just talking about last podcast how, let's see how Shaq Harrison goes as a regular NBA point guard, but I don't think we're going to get the chance, unfortunately. Yeah. Or Isaiah Cannon could make the team, and they're going to have two rookies and a guy with 23 games of NBA experience as their point guard rotation. That would be interesting.
Final thoughts? We covered everything, I think.
Yeah, not really much else to go over. I'm gonna be in Prescott, not Prescott, Flagstaff. I keep saying Prescott Valley or something besides Flagstaff. I will be at NAU.
I hope you know where you're going.
Yeah, Cole was like, it's kind of hard to get there, and if you park over, I was like, oh great, this just sounds delightful. I will be there Tuesday through Friday. I will be writing from there all week. I think Media Day is something where like me and you write a bunch of stuff over like 2 days, and it's going to be more spread out this time because don't want to burn it all out at once from my end. And then the open practice is on Saturday. I can't recite the information off at what time it is and all that kind of stuff to you, but just look it up. Look up Suns open practice and you'll find it somewhere. Google is your best friend, people. Always remember that. People who tweet me questions like, how many games did da-da-da play last year? And I'm like, Google is your best friend. And then that Monday, like 2 days later, they play the Kings in the preseason. So we are going to get going. We're going to podcast again maybe the day I get back, or depending on developments, who knows. And I'm over the waiting for the point guard trade. If it happens, it happens. I think that's kind of how we have to operate with this now. The season is 3 weeks away.
Stay in the now. We'll stay in the now little bit. Kelden and I are both, just because of our job descriptions at this point, we're going to be out at Suns a bit more than last year, which is going to be super great because we're going to be closer to the team, hopefully talking about things that no one else cares about with them as we go along. So we're super excited for the season to get going. Of course, we appreciate all you guys for listening and continuing to do so, because that's why we are here for you. So thank you as always. We'll get to podcasting later on this week after training camp, or maybe even during training camp if Kellen feels like calling in.
We'll see.